Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
My guest is Ben Bergerson, the Chief Information Officer of the U.S. Trade and Development Agency. Ben, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's good to be here, Jason.
Well, this is my first time ever talking to the CIO of the USTDA. It's a mouthful to say, but so let's just start at the beginning. I always like to kind of make this a get to know you a little bit. Talk about the mission of the U.S. Trade and Development Agency.
The U.S. Trade and Development Agency, or USTDA, is a small independent agency that helps companies create U.S. jobs. We work to increase exports of U.S. goods and services through priority development projects in emerging countries. We fund little pilots with U.S. companies, and for example, say a Wi-Fi company wants to sell their Wi-Fi hotspots. We would give them a grant to do a pilot project, say for $5 million. They would demonstrate it overseas in a developing country. The mayor of that town loves it. He tells all the other mayors and governors in his country, and they end up spending $500 million in U.S. exports and goods. So it's priming the pump, and last year we ended up bringing in $3.3 billion with just $60 million in our grants and project funding. Over the course of since we were created independently, since 1992, we've brought in $86 billion, and we've helped create over 300,000 jobs. So it's a little agency. It's like the mouse that roared.
Great example of the mouse that roared. A little bit can do go a long way, and that's amazing. $3.3 billion last year in terms of bringing in for trade and then only costing about $60 million. That's a great return on investment. I'm sure it's an easy case to make of why you guys are doing what you're doing. Now, you're the CIO of this agency. Talk a little bit about how you support this mission of the USTDA.
I am the first full-time CIO of the agency, and I support the organization through data analytics and analysis. So you can see our mission is where can we help the U.S. economy and where can we help do more exports. So that's a lot of economic analysis, that's databases and analytical systems and collaboration portals that we have internally, looking over where the markets are going and what companies are able to meet those needs in the U.S. and how we can help do pilot projects with them. So it's a lot of data analytics. Also, we have small mobile users. So we go and we take a look at the projects that we funded and take a look and see how they're progressing. So I've got mobile users globally that need to be able to communicate in developing countries and have the latest technology to talk via email or instant messaging or video conferencing on their mobile phones. So we are doing this with strategy. So what is the most affordable way that it can be done, not the most expensive, because we're a small agency with a very small budget. And I'm also, as the first full-time CIO, incorporating the risk management framework, or RMF, into everything we do. So when they say, should we buy this or buy that, I'm mapping it back to, here's the value to the mission in real life. We've got this person over in that country, or we've got a trade delegation going next month. Here's the value and the cost. Here's the impact to the mission, and here's the risks if we do it or we don't do it. And that's bringing a executive-level insight to IT services here.
So first CIO ever at the agency, I guess the question for me is, what took so long, right? I know it's not up to you to make that decision, but did you get a sense of why you're the first one versus why wasn't there a first one 5, 7, 10 years ago?
It's always been a additional duties as assigned in the federal government. So they've always had one. They've never had a full-time one. And the value of IT services and the impact all the way into the mission is so great now, they said, we need to have someone focus on it full time.
The other piece of this is interesting. I want to go into a little bit more detail, is your idea of risk management framework into everything you do. That is really taking the perspective of, hey, the mission comes first, IT is the enabler. We hear that all the time, but that seems to really turning the corner. How's that being accepted, if you will, by, if you will, your bosses and your boss's bosses?
It's actually helping a lot, because I can get funding for services when I map them to the mission. So when I say we should move to the cloud, and that's a theoretical thing, it has a lot more sticking power when I say our people over in Asia or Latin America or Europe are in a different time zone, and they need to be able to access their network files 12 hours at a different time. At the same time that our building might be having maintenance, the plumbing or electrical work or teleco company may be doing work and saying, if this is in the cloud, then people overseas and people locally can access the files at 3 in the morning or 3 in the afternoon, and there is very low cost to it. So when you get a high mission value and a low cost with a concrete example, it just takes off.
And I think generally speaking, because you're looking at not just cyber, but mission, people, executives generally speaking, get mission. Executives may not get cyber as well, even after we've seen all the hacks that have been going on. But I imagine that that cyber piece, as you bring into it, is something that the executives, again, are getting more and more. They understand the impact. They may not understand all the bits and bytes and all the technology, but that, hey, if we get hacked or if we don't understand the cyber implication of this decision, the long-term effect or the short-term effect could be great. Are you seeing that as well?
There is a very tight integration with all the leaders of the agency and myself on mission impact and risk. And risk is more than just cybersecurity. It's also mission failure or degradation of services or slowdown of services. And yes, we're talking all the time, are you up to date? And are the systems safe? So we just had a check on WannaCry, and I said, yeah, we patched that a month ago. So, and then we double-checked when everyone else got hit. We're fine. But there's very tight awareness at the leadership level of what's going on and what's the risks to the agency and how do we protect ourselves against those things.
That's really refreshing, I think. I think, you know, as you hear from the White House and the Office of Management and Budget pushing the A123 changes, the risk management, I think this example is a successful one and one that potentially others could follow. I don't know if you're having conversations yet with some other agencies, but if not, I hope that you, from our discussion, you get a couple of calls.
Yes. When I was in a large agency, I sat on the cybersecurity subcommittee on the CIO Council. Now that I'm at a small agency, I sit on the small agency CIO Council, and we talk about this every week, every month.
Excellent. Well, this is a perfect segue to your background a little bit. As you said, you're the first full-time CIO at the U.S. Trade and Development Agency, but talk a little bit about where you've worked previously, both in government and out of government.
I started almost 25 years ago doing cybersecurity and IT work in upstate New York. I was a member of one of the very first InfraGuard chapters in industry from a telecommunications company. InfraGuard is the outreach program from the FBI where they share information with academia, business, banking, and government to protect industry as well as to help the government. And that got me hooked. I then came to the D.C. area, and I was a certified information security auditor. I would go and take a look at civilian agencies as well as military bases, and having the background of a security engineer, I'd say, this firewall is configured properly, that router isn't, and here's how it can actually turn into a real risk for your agency. This is how you can break in. Let me show you. And during the audits, I would show the managers, this is a real thing and this isn't. This is a paper compliance thing. And they would call their engineers in and say, we need to fix this now. The good thing about that is when I walked off the civilian agency or the military base, they were more secure than the day I walked on, and it was a matter of hours. They also got audit findings, but they were written up as handled while on site. So it was very rewarding to see the improvements right in front of your eyes. I then became a security manager and a consultant. Then I became a U.S. Navy civilian cybersecurity program manager. I was assigned to the National Science Foundation, and that was back in late 2007 to 2010. We were cybersecurity support to the National Science Foundation, who has the executive mission to do science for the nation in Antarctica, for South Pole, McMurdo, Palmer Station, and that's very cool.
Now, I got to jump in. Did you get to go to the South Pole?
Yes, I got to go a month at a time for 3 years in a row, and it is quite amazing. I mean, you come out after a 7 or 8 hour flight, and you land at McMurdo Airport, which is an ice airport, and you're walking into town, and the sun is straight up above you, but it's midnight. And penguins are following the U.S. Coast Guard cutter ships who were cutting a path for the Navy cargo supply ships. And the penguins walk up onto land, and they say hello to you as they're wandering around.
What a great experience. I can only imagine. I remember talking to a vendor who was supporting, maybe it was the North Pole, but they were supporting an agency up there, too, and he got to go there, too. And that was just fascinating. But South Pole is also very cool. And when did you come to the U.S. Trade and Development Agency?
That was back in 2007 to 2010. I was then CIO for the Inspector General's Office at Commerce. I then was the Information Security Officer for max.gov out at OMB. And I spent 3 years doing that. And then I just came here to USTDA in August of 2016.
All right, very nice. That's a great summation of a very interesting path you took to get to being a CIO. I always find it interesting when people start in auditing or start in kind of a separate field and kind of make their way toward a CIO. Real quick, just give me a sense about your office, the CIO's office at the U.S. Trade and Development Agency.
The CIO's office is a hybrid solution. We're made up of federal employees, contractors, and shared service providers. So since we're a small agency, we get things like our financial database systems from Department of Interior. We get our time cards from another agency. We get HR services from another organization. And we end up blending on-site federal staff, contractors, as well as services off-site from other large agencies.
All right. That is a good beginning of our conversation. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll jump into some of your priorities. My guest is Ben Bergensen, the Chief Information Officer of the U.S. Trade and Development Agency. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest is Ben Bergensen, the Chief Information Officer of the U.S. Trade and Development Agency. Now, Ben, before break, we're getting to know you a little bit about your background and about your office, and let's jump into your priorities. One of the things you mentioned is data analysis. You also mentioned shared services, and you mentioned risk management framework. So you gave us a little bit of a heads up. So tell us, what are you trying to get done over the next 6 or 9 months?
We are enhancing our data analytics systems. So we're going to be upgrading them so that they are easier to use and easier to do searches. Our analysts go in and look at history of projects that we've done from anywhere from last week to decades ago and figure out what the success factors were in that and the key performance indicators, and then how do they go fund a new grant for a new small company in the U.S. to do some more exports. I'm going to be upgrading the database systems to make it simpler and faster for the analysts to do that. We're also going to be doing more shared services. So there's a strategy there of what should we do in-house, what can we do in-house, and what should we do with shared services, and what can we do with shared services. We already have email in the cloud. We are moving our personal network shares right now into the cloud, and we're going to be moving our network storage, our collaboration portal, and then lastly, we're going to be moving our legacy applications into the cloud. The third piece is risk management of what are the things that could go wrong and what are the things that have gone wrong in the past. When I started in the Antarctic program, the first month I was there, I said, give me your worst IT project that has failed. And I said, well, this one's failed for 3 years in a row. Whoever the project manager is couldn't get it to run. I said, okay, I'll take it. Give me your hairiest, ugliest project. And it was a system for detection, and I found that there was a need for training in the new technology as well as manufacturer assistance. And it turned into a successful project, and it had huge returns on investment. So I'm looking at what could cause an IT project to fail, how to prevent it from failing. Should we be spending money now or not? Should we be spending next year or 2 years from now? And that really helps in the boardroom when you say, this is the order and sequence and strategy of items that you want to do. We move this network share now. We move that one later. This systems we're going to retire and we're not going to replace, and we're going to save $10,000 or $20,000 or $2 or $3 million. These systems are due to be replaced. And that really keys in when you can say, I am watching your money and saving you money as well as moving you to new services. So it's data analytics upgrades, it's moving to the cloud, as well as what are the risks for doing all these things, and how do you make them a success?
All right, let's step back for a second, because I want to start with the data analytics piece. That's since you said you guys are a big data agency in many regards. When you talk about improving the data analytics system, go into a little more detail. What do you mean by that? What kind of tools are you looking for, or what kind of tools do you already have that you're going to be installing?
We have a legacy database system, and it was built 8 or 9 years ago, and it doesn't have a lot of the features that you would want to see today. And what we're looking at is basically speed and user interfaces. So the user doesn't notice that, but it's a complete rebuild on the back end of the databases. And also we're looking at when do we move it from our local databases to the cloud, and the differences in access. So right now it's down the hallway, and you've got very fast gigabit connection for every user from their desktop to the data center. Well, what happens when it's out in the cloud? If you have, are you going to need a terabyte per second of access? Not really, but you're going to need more than your regular internet connection. So there's interconnection pieces, and when you're talking about speed of data analytics, it's the weakest or slowest link slows everything down. One of the things we did was move our data off of the local servers into a storage area network. Well, if you don't have the network configurations optimized, that can be a slow link in your chain between the server and your data, even if it's one box down in the same rack. So it's analyzing the complete solution end to end and finding out where the pieces are that slow it down, where it speeds up, and how to make it a more enjoyable experience. I did this at the Inspector General's office at Commerce Department. I mean, we went from a data analysis job, so they had auditors that were doing analysis of where there would be a risk in some bureau and where what they should look at. It would take them 30 minutes to run a report and do an analytics job. After I analyzed the different steps of it and optimized it, it got done in 60 seconds. So from 30 minutes to 60 seconds is a huge improvement in productivity for our analysts. And so I'm doing that again here over at USTDA.
Now, do you expect that same kind of improvement, 30 minutes down to 60 seconds, to come to USTDA as well?
It depends on what I find on each of the areas. So I've already found some pieces to optimize, and it has shortened the analysis down a lot, but we're still going. So I don't have the total improvements yet.
And moving all this to the cloud, at least not maybe not all of it, but at least some of it to the cloud, what's the biggest concern there? Is it just ensuring that latency issue? As you said, the slowest link in the chain could really slow everyone down. Or do you have security concerns, or are there other concerns?
Well, I'm drawing on my experience when I was the information security officer for max.gov, which is the cloud service provider for OMB. We helped build integrity.gov, which is a cloud-based financial disclosure system, and we went through speed optimizations in there. It's the same thing as if you had a physical infrastructure, but it's virtualized. So your virtual, how much memory do you have, how much storage do you have, how many processing CPUs do you have, and what is the load stress testing? If everyone fills out their financial disclosure item all on the same day in January when the email reminder goes out, can your system handle 20 or 30,000 people or 100,000 people logging in at once? The next piece is security, and what we did there is we put in security standards for civilian agencies with FedRAMP, as well as DoD protection levels, as well as OMB agency requirements, so that every customer would feel comfortable because we were speaking their language. So drawing on that background, I'm looking at the same things when I move the USTDA systems into the cloud is, can we handle the stress test of what happens when we're about to give a big grant or we're going to be supporting a trade mission, and can our systems handle the load even though they're virtualized up in the cloud? And also, what are the security levels of the systems that we have? And we're excited because we can rely on more shared services, more FedRAMP authorized and accredited cloud providers, as well as independent third-party assessment organizations, 3PAOs. And we can leverage that a lot faster than if we had to build it ourselves with our agency resources.
I think that's a great experience. I forgot that when I was doing my research that you had spent a lot of time with the OMBmax.gov, a site I can say I've never had access to use, so you've done well. not that I would hack into it because I have no hacking skills, but my point is there's never a mistake of by accident. When you talk about the data analysis work, the better tools, are you guys looking at a new contract? Did you already have a contractor on board to provide you these tools? I know you'll probably get a lot of acquisition interest based on this conversation, so maybe you can nip it in the bud if need be.
Yes, we have a contract in place for the data analytics as well as the upgrade to the new data management system. And so we're in the middle of a multi-year contract for that. We do buy new services, and when our hardware breaks or gets old or when we need additional point solutions, and what we do there is we go to GSA and we take a look at what's on their Alliance or Alliant contracts or their Schedule 70 or STARS or EIS, and we do our procurement through GSA, because they've already done all the foundation level work, and as a small agency, we can quickly leverage what they've already done. So yeah, if we are going to be buying new things and vendors would want to make sure that they are on GSA contract to be considered well.
All right, excellent advice. I want to talk more about cloud, but first let's take a quick break, and then we will come back and talk a little bit more about cloud. My guest is Ben Bergerson, the Chief Information Officer of the U.S. Trade and Development Agency. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest is Ben Bergerson, the Chief Information Officer of the U.S. Trade and Development Agency. Now, Ben, before break, we were talking about some of your priorities. A big one, obviously, was data analytics. We talked a little bit about cloud, but so I want to delve into that just a little more deeply. You mentioned you've already had your email in the cloud. You're moving your personal network shares into the cloud, and then you also are moving, in the future, network storage, legacy apps, and collaboration software into the cloud. Talk about the cloud a little bit, how big of a role it plays. You brought up the idea earlier that if you have people in Asia or Europe that need access, the cloud maybe is a way to balance the needs and the risks and to mission. So talk about the role cloud plays for the U.S. Trade and Development Agency.
We are in multiple different FedRAMP authorized and managed FedRAMP cloud systems, and our email system is already out there. We have our website is out in the cloud, ustda.gov, and for our mobile users, what we're implementing is synchronization for offline use. So that helps if we are in our local offices and somebody tears up the connections for power or air conditioning in our building, we still have our data on our encrypted laptops and desktops here available. Same thing for our portable phones and our laptops of our global users. So when they have connectivity to the cloud, they can synchronize, and it's all done in the background. And then when they do not have connectivity, they can work locally. And that also helps in patching and updating in cybersecurity. So if a system's not available while it's being updated, it's still the data is local, and then it comes back online and the data gets synchronized. So it helps for cybersecurity. It helps for mobile users. And the next thing that we're doing is we're finishing our personal shares are going to the cloud. We're almost done with that. The next piece is our network shares. After that, we are going with our collaboration portal, which includes our team spaces and our different divisions of the offices, as well as our parking spot reservation calendar or our calendars for events that are coming up. And we've got, lastly, our legacy applications. Agencies, that's their lifeblood. So it isn't a quick fix or a quick move from one data center to another or from one data center to the cloud. You've got to see, well, what happens if the system doesn't come up? What happens if it's too slow? What happens if the data is corrupted during the move? So the legacy applications will take longer. That could be a 1 to 2 year project, where these others would be just a few months each.
Now, one of the interesting things you mentioned was the synchronization. I've had an interesting conversation recently with the State Department CIO, and they've been less inclined to move to the cloud for a reason you've kind of described. How did you deal with that synchronization issue?
Well, we have much smaller amounts of individual files that get synced on our personal network shares. So you might work on half a dozen different documents or spreadsheets or presentations in a day, and that is not a large amount of data to synchronize. And if the internet connection goes down, it's stored on your local laptop or on your mobile phone, and when it comes back up, it synchronizes. And we've been doing this for about 6 months, and it's worked great. I mean, during connectivity's going down due to maintenance, if the power company says it's time for our annual maintenance on our transformers, we're going to cut power to your building, we would work locally, the power comes back up, and this is like in 3 a.m, but there's also people overseas where that's 3 p.m. So we haven't experienced any issues with it.
I think that's super. I mean, it's a challenge so many agencies are facing, and I think, you know, if you guys have found a solution to this problem, I think that's a great step. I think a lot of people will be interested in it. The other piece I want to touch about is legacy applications. And again, another challenge a lot of agencies have, even a smaller agency like yours, you still, as you said, can't just lift and shift. And if something breaks, that's a major, potentially a major impact to the mission. Talk a little bit about your process to ensure these legacy apps are going to be moved to, when they are moved to the cloud, they will work and they will meet your needs.
The data and the analytics services are what is the lifeblood to our mission. The actual database or the servers are support components. So what we would be doing is we would take our data analytics system and make a copy of the data and the workflows and the analysis features and put that up in a cloud in virtual machines that are clustered and highly available in a test environment. And then we would build it with the latest technology there. So it wouldn't be picking up old legacy systems and just dropping them in the cloud, because it wouldn't have the value of new features that have come out in the last decade. And so what we would be moving is our data and then our analytics that we need to be able to do with it. And then we'd be using the new technology, the new database systems, the new virtual servers that are available now.
And you said this would be a longer-term project, you know, 1 to 2 years potentially. What's the status of it? Have you guys gone down this path or started the initial kind of inventory, if you will?
We are planning for it now, and we are doing the initial research. We've taken a look. We've already completed our inventory of software assets and data assets, and now we're saying, okay, what's the path to move and how would we do that over the next year or two?
One last thing about the cloud that just came to mind as you described it. A lot of people initially thought cloud would be a big money or cost saver. Then people moved through the federal community around this agility and this flexibility and more services for the same amount of money. You seem to be maybe doing a little bit of both. There seems to be some cost factors that are driving you, but also the flexibility and agility factors. Which one is driving you the most, I guess, is my question.
We're doing those simultaneously. I mean, for example, our financial system is through a shared service provider from another federal agency. We're saving between $500,000 and $750,000 a year every year by going with a shared service versus having a dedicated server for our financial systems, even if we have another federal agency run that server for us. And so that's a big cost savings. We've saved millions of dollars a year over the last several years doing that. There's also the flexibility of we're moving. Our federal agency office building lease is ending, and over the summer, we're moving to a new office, and the flexibility has to be there of how do you assure the mission? Well, the answer is if the data is not in a local data center, it doesn't matter that we're moving our office space because it's already in the cloud. So for the agility of you need to be able to pick up and move to a new office, that gives us cloud services, and the fact that we're saving millions of dollars over the course of several years. That money goes right back into grants that we can give and do more U.S. exports.
You brought up your move. I got to ask, where are you guys moving to? Where are you guys now?
We are in Roslyn and near the Roslyn Metro station, a few blocks away, and we're in the process of signing a new lease. So we will be able to know soon where we're going.
All right, so stay tuned. Something to follow up with you when that happens. Moves are always fascinating, especially from an IT perspective, because so much of what happens is technology. One last priority you want to jump into as well is around that you mentioned the risk management framework. There is a new executive order that really focuses on risk and cybersecurity. Talk a little bit more. You give us a little bit of a heads up about the executive side of it, meaning their acceptance. Talk a bit from the IT side, from the CIO's perspective of how you're implementing the risk management framework.
So I started in August of 2016 as a CIO for U.S. Trade and Development Agency, and I started integrating the risk management framework into everything I do. It just comes naturally because when I was in the U.S. Antarctic program, we had over 100 projects. And I said, well, we need a way to do portfolio management. And as head of cybersecurity, I said, well, let's create a risk management framework. And this is back in 2007. And, okay, what is the value to the mission? What's the cost in dollars? What is the potential impact to reputation if the service doesn't go well? What is the compliance issues for rules and regulations and laws? What is the operational security issue for the head of the agency or the CIO if the service is compromised? And then you rack and stack 100 different projects, and that's how you prioritize what you do when you have limited resources and limited funding. Even in the billion-dollar National Science Foundation program or a very small agency here. So it was just natural for me to put into purchase requests, we don't need to buy this now. We need to buy new servers in 2 or 3 years, but we do need to replace this one. And by the way, we can retire 2 or 3 others, and that will reduce our risk because those servers are 10 years old and they're no longer supported by the manufacturer. I mean, if you can put a graphical chart in your purchase requests that only takes up maybe a third of the page, people quickly see, okay, you're thinking about why we should do this, not just yes, we buy, no, we don't. And it's now in everything we do. For what patches do we do when we do maintenance, and in what order? Which ones will have the biggest impact to protecting us on what's happening out on the internet versus are you going to take down a server or a service that we need that evening or that weekend because we have a trade mission going on or a data analytics report that's due the next morning? And so it's in procurement, it's in strategy for the move, it's in day-to-day operations for patch management. I mean, risk is management is how do you provide good services with the resources that you have. And so when this executive order came out, we said, we're already doing this, we are already tracking it in a risk management framework and a risk register and our POEM lists, and so we're already following along in this executive order, and we're happy to see it.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, maybe we can talk a little bit more about the risk management framework, because I think the EO is out. Every agency now is going to have a job to do, if you will, around risk management. But first, we'll take a quick break. My guest is Ben Bergerson, the Chief Information Officer of the U.S. Trade and Development Agency. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest is Ben Bergerson, Chief Information Officer of the U.S. Trade and Development Agency. Now, Ben, before break, we were talking about cloud, and we talked about the risk management framework a little bit, and you talked about bringing into everything you do, procurement, strategy, day-to-day operations. That got me thinking a little bit. As agencies are implementing the executive order that recently came out around cybersecurity and risk management, are you guys using a specific risk management framework? NIST has one, for instance. Did you develop your own that you brought in and then, you know, kind of overlaid NIST to it? What framework, I guess, are you using?
We are using the NIST framework, and we are starting with the NIST documents on NIST 853 as well as 837, 839. We're also using the POEM register that FedRAMP has. So FedRAMP is based on NISC. And so if you don't have templates, and there have been questions in the CIO councils of, say we want to do risk analysis, risk assessment reports, and follow those, well, you can use the FedRAMP documents. We're also using the framework for improving critical infrastructure cybersecurity, and that's called the NIST framework. So we're using all of those, and we did something that I developed about 25 years ago, with not using the government standards, but just because it was a good idea to do, is a closeout package back when I was in the telco industry in upstate New York. When you create a service or a new server or a new system, you want to close out the project, and that ties right into your project management and those types of controls. The closeout packages that we have include a runbook on how to operate and maintain the new service, training for the end users, training for our IT staff, so we cross-train each other. That reduces risk with when people are out sick or on vacation. Also, we have a standard configuration report, and that's based off of the NIST standard configs, which are also tied to the DoD DISA STIGs, and a risk assessment report of, okay, we scanned your system, we took a look at the strengths and weaknesses of it with a vulnerability management system, and here's where you are meeting, here's where you're exceeding, and here's where you're not meeting the requirements for protections. And you send the engineers back and say that risk level is high, we don't accept high risk, so go back and fix those things, get it down to a low risk level. Then you come back and say, okay, these things are good, and with low risk, you can take another month to fix that, and you can do it in production, or no, don't fix that in production, keep it in the test lab until it's done. So we integrate a risk assessment report and risk acceptance documents into every single project we do, every single service, in a closeout package. And that's a policy that we have that I wrote. And it's based on my personal experience going back 25 years, but it's using all the NIST documents now today.
Very interesting. I think a closeout package, sometimes that's the piece that people forget about. So often, once in a while, you have somebody who goes, we did all the upfront work, and then they forget about the back end. So kudos to you for thinking of that. And I'm sure there's probably some people who may be interested in that to borrow it in the future.
Yes, certainly. They can just email or look me up in the Small Agency CIO Council. And it works great because you're delivering a service, but you want to tie up all the loose ends. Do the customers know about it? Is it communicated out? Has it been tested? Do the features validated? And is everyone trained on it? So from the help desk to the users to the engineers.
Ben, unfortunately, though, we're out of time. This was a great conversation and definitely plenty to follow up with you in the future. So I'd like to thank my guest, Ben Bergerson, the Chief Information Officer of the U.S. Trade and Development Agency. Ben, thank you so much for taking the time today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you today, Jason.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, Ask the CIO, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.